Welcome back to tonight's Presidential Candidate Forum, hosted by the Ohio Christian Alliance. In just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by former Senator of Tennessee, Fred Thompson, and you've been listening this last hour as we've interviewed both Kansas Senator Sam Brownback, and we just concluded with former Ambassador Alan Keyes. Again, I'd like, as a program note, to remind you that immediately following our interview with Mr. Thompson, that we will be having a roundtable discussion that will take us to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The number to call in is 800-823-9733, and we hope that you'll participate with our roundtable discussion with Steve Scheffler, president of the Iowa Christian Alliance, and Sadie Fields of the Georgia Christian Alliance. And, of course, we encourage your participation as well. Your comments and thoughts at tonight's forum and or comments of other candidates that were not able to join us in these candidate forums. But as promised, with us on the phone is the former Senator of Tennessee, Mr. Fred Thompson. Mr. Thompson, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for joining us for this Presidential Candidate Forum. It's our pleasure to have you with us.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate what you're all doing for America.
Very good. Well, we'd like to just start right out with some of the questions. The first category is illegal immigration. Many of the voters are concerned. This last summer, Congress attempted to pass an amnesty bill, much like what took place in 1986. Former administrators of the Reagan administration said that it didn't work then, with 2 to 3 million illegals being granted amnesty. It just encouraged more illegal activity over the border, and many voters wouldn't have of it, and they flooded the phone lines in Washington, letting Congress know that they were not for an amnesty program at this time. What are your views of illegal immigration and border security?
Well, getting back to the 86 law, you got it exactly right. Congress this year tried to sell the same horse twice, and the American people let them know what they thought about it, and they were shocked in Washington that they got the reaction that they did from it, which shows how out of touch they are in many respects. But a nation that cannot secure its borders will not remain a sovereign nation. It's just that simple. There are a lot of reasons for rejecting that bill. But the main one is to send the message that don't talk to us about anything else until you secure the border. It has to be done. A lot of good reasons for that. Fairness issue with regard to those who have stood in line by the hundreds of thousands around the world at our embassy and other places to play by the rules, come here and become productive and good citizens with good moral values and valuable members of our society. To put people ahead of them is an extremely unfair thing to do. It's also a national security issue. We're apprehending thousands of people at the border, have been over the last few years, who are from state sponsors of terrorism, those countries associated with terrorism. Doesn't mean that these folks are terrorists, but it doesn't mean that they're not. And for everyone that we catch, they estimate about three that we don't catch at the border. In the era of the suitcase bomb, we simply can't have that. A lot of good ideas as to how we can secure the border. Obviously, there's hundreds of miles of fence that are on the books that are supposed to be being built right now. Some have started, and we've got to do more in that regard. And modern technology can help us out there and increase Border Patrol. But like so many government issues, it's not a matter of how-to, it's a matter of will. And we simply haven't had the will in times past, and we must have that. It's a matter of fairness, it's a matter of national security, and it's a matter of what's in the long-term interest of our country. There's some agricultural interest involved, there's no question about that, but we cannot allow ourselves to become dependent on something like that, even if we have to pay a little bit more for fruit.
Very good. What is your opinion of the so-called sanctuary cities that flaunt their disregard of violations of federal immigration laws? What should be done with them?
Well, when I was in the Senate, we passed a bill that outlawed sanctuary cities. We can't, under the Constitution, according to interpretations, make the cities affirmatively very much, but these cities, many of them, of course, passed ordinances that will not allow their people to assist the federal authorities. In fact, you know, they've gone to court to try to stop it and that sort of thing. This is part of the problem. We are a lure because of our prosperity to people wanting to come here, and you can understand that. They want to come and work and better their lives and all of that, but we simply can't have enforcement with the constant lure, not only the ones that are naturally there, but the additional lures of things like sanctuary cities and schools that give in-state preference to illegal aliens. That was a part of our bill, too, but they're still doing it. We need to do more. If these people are receiving federal funds, we've got some methods and means there to do more about that. So we along with employers, they need to do the responsible thing. They have a system called E-Verify now that needs to be used by people. They can punch in the name and the Social Security number and check that out. There's ways to do that, but we have to stop providing these lures that's going to make enforcement even more difficult. People ask about what the ones already here. If we enforce the laws, if we did the right thing with regard to the borders, and we quit providing additional lures to people over a period of time, we would have attrition and be moving substantially, I think, in the right direction.
Thank you. This next question is under abortion. What is your view of abortion on demand in this country?
Well, I'm against it. I'm one of the people, few people running that have had the opportunity to have a federal record on this from the very beginning. I was 8 years in the Senate. My record with regard to abortion-related issues is 100%. I would govern the same way if I was president of the United States. We faced issues concerning funding of abortion, federal funding, a so-called partial birth abortion, Mexico City, all of those kinds of things. I received the support of Right to Life, and they said after my career, into my career, that I was living up to the commitments that I had made. So I feel that I've been blessed early in my life and late. I was a teenage father, and I'm the father of two small children now. It was an unexpected thing in my life, but just a total blessing. And it comes to me more now and deep in my heart these issues and thinking these things through than even before. My public record was always in the same place, but I must say that it's deepened when I saw that sonogram of my little girl and learned about when these little babies, you know, first develop their fingerprints and can feel pain and that sort of thing. We're learning more about that all the time. So that's the way I feel.
Yes, thank you. This next question is in regards to embryonic stem cell research funding. Recently, Congress has passed legislation that would expand human embryo research. President Bush has twice vetoed attempts by Congress to expand the usage of human embryos for research. What is your position on embryonic stem cell research funding?
I support the president on that. I think that the government simply cannot be a part of creating life to destroy it. And I judge all issues related to this by that standard. I think that incidentally, it's not determinative one way or the other. But I think it's good to take note of the fact that apparently a lot of good things are happening with regard to adult stem cell research, and we all hope that that's the case. We seems to me like we don't even need to go there as a nation in terms of some of the things that are being proposed. But I support the president's vetoes on that.
Thank you. Next question has to do with the federal courts and nominating justices. One of the dramas that seems to unfold in Washington is when a seat comes open on the Supreme Court. Mr. Bush has had the opportunity to nominate two new members to the Supreme Court during his term. As president, what types of justices would you nominate to the federal courts and to the Supreme Court?
People who follow the law and the Constitution instead of making it up as they go. It is a tragedy in this country that is founded on the rule of law and has been an example for it around the world, that it is often violated by judges themselves and members of the judiciary. Goes against the grain, the idea that of what we believe in this country, and the idea that founding fathers would have set up, after dividing the power the way they did in the executive branch against the legislature and all three branches of government, that they would then turn around and willingly give an unelected branch of government this unfettered power that is deciding so many social, religious issues and other things based upon what they feel contemporary society requires. I had a great opportunity and privilege in this regard when President Bush called me and asked me to help now Chief Justice John Roberts go through the Senate confirmation process. We did that. I think the whole nation was reminded once again of the importance of sound justices who follow the law. I think he and Alito both are going to be great justices. I'm big admirers of them. And it also provided a great lesson for anyone who would aspire to be president of the United States, and that is that quality wins. Quality can win out. We got some Democratic votes out of the Judiciary Committee, even though Republicans were in the majority. It was good and a good signal to the floor, and of course he won handily on the floor. But it's always been my opinion that we've made some mistakes. Conservative presidents, Republican presidents, have made mistakes in times past by sending up a conservative and it not working out, or being afraid to send up a conservative and send someone who was confirmable. If you send up a good man or woman, and they get rejected because of partisan reasons or because they want to keep the liberal balance as they see it on the court out of Congress or out of the Senate, then we ought to send another one up right after that and have that debate again and have it constantly before the American people. That's a debate that we can win before the American people. If we've got a sound constitutionalist and a good person, the way John Roberts is and was, we can win that battle, and I was privileged to be a part of that particular episode.
Many independent voters have looked at the deep division in Washington in recent years with a very caustic environment in the partisanship and a lot of the rhetoric that's been passed back and forth among the members of Congress and in the Senate. What, in your opinion, could bring some type of civility and bringing Americans together again in such a hostile environment that we seem to have now politically?
Well, maybe we need a better quality of politician. that might go a long way. I don't think politicians can pass the buck, or the president can pass the buck, and a president especially has to set the example of being fair, being fair-minded, of recognizing that the president is the president of all the people, and that everyone should, in effect, have a seat at the table and be willing to reach across the aisle. Nothing important in this country anymore can get done without some bipartisan support. So you have to have keep your strong principles like Ronald Reagan did. You don't have to go around and try to buy off every little constituency group. Keep your strong principles, but it serves as a magnet, and people gravitate to that. And you can develop the grassroots support throughout the country that will send a signal to the politicians. And that's the one thing they pay attention to. You can have all the coffee get-togethers and all the photo ops, and you can be as nice as you can possibly be, but the political landscape is such nowadays that we see outfits like MoveOn.org pulling the strings of the Democratic Party. They won't let them do anything unless there is a bigger force out there in the country that makes them think that for their political welfare, they better pay attention. And Reagan was able to do that with his coalition. I think the next Republican president has got to be able to do that. And then, you know, just be a decent person. I like to think that one of the reasons the president called on me with regard to John Roberts, because he knew that I had some respect up there among my former colleagues and the ones who had worked with me, even the ones who disagree with me, think that that I'm a fair-minded guy, I think. And, you know, it takes a combination of that. But ultimately, it's going to take the support, the strong, visible support of the American people sending the message.
Our next question comes from one of our listeners in regards to Israel. He states, Israel is a small nation surrounded by enemies who want to drive her into the sea. Why is it important for the U.S. to remain a staunch supporter of Israel?
Our history together, our cultural, religious ties, the fact that it is a democratic oasis in that part of the world, all demands that that we maintain our friendship and we support Israel in what I believe is the fight for its existence. The caller is absolutely right. Israel is under assault. They've got the Hezbollah in the southern part of Lebanon there that is apparently arming itself again with Iranian help and Syrian help. They've got Hamas in Gaza, and you know, have fired rockets over from there, and of course they have the Palestinian government, which ironically shows possibly the most promise of having some sanity among in that part of the world, and some hope, but they have they are surrounded by hostility, and their military at one time was considered by some as pretty much invincible, and now they've demonstrated that perhaps that's not the case. So I'm concerned about the future, and it makes it that much more important that we stand strong with them.
Very good. One last question, Senator. Tell us why you're running for the presidency of the United States of America.
Well, that's the most important question of all, of course. I think most people that know me know that this has not been a burning ambition of mine as a politician. I put term limits on myself when I ran for the Senate and lived up to them. But I've been blessed. I have a certain obligation. I look at the world, and I wonder what kind of a world and country my kids and grandkids are going to grow up in. And I think there are going to be decisions on the next president's plate. They are going to determine our future in many respects for a long time to come. I think our country is going to be at a crossroads, and whether or not we're going to take the, now that, you know, as a democracy, we've discovered we've got the keys to our own treasury, whether we're going to take the ease of comfort and consumption for today and no concern for the future and future generations, and go down the road of Western Europe in terms of their economy and values and that sort of thing, or whether or not we're going to stay with the things that made us not only a great nation, but a good nation. And we've got some tough things to come to terms with in terms of our security, the fact that we're going to have more unity and commitment in this global war against Islamic radicalism. Iraq is a current front, but the problem is much bigger than that, going to take longer and cost more than a lot of people want to come to terms with. On the prosperity side, we're spending our grandchildren and money and those yet to be born and borrowing from other countries for current consumption as we are blessed with longer lives and longer retirement, but we're turning that blessing today into a curse for future generations if we don't reform our mandatory spending, and part of that is an entitlement issue that's facing us, and nobody wants to talk about it because it's politically unpopular. So I think we need a president who understands the glory of our past, what we need to do today, and the greatness of America's future if we adhere to what made us great in the first place. And I believe I'm that man.
Senator Thompson, I want to thank you on behalf of all of our listeners tonight of the Christian Alliance chapters across the country. Thank you, sir, for joining us tonight.
Thank you for the privilege of being with you.
Very good. God bless.
Thank you.
Well, very good. Please join with us. And we're going to go to a commercial break, but then we're going to be joined by Sadie Fields, chairwoman of the Georgia Christian Alliance, Steve Scheffler of the Iowa Christian Alliance, and your phone calls at 800-823-9733. You have a thought or a comment tonight about our forum and the candidates that shared with us tonight in their own words where they stand on these important issues. We'd like to hear from you. Again, 800-823-9733. I'm Chris Long, the president of the Ohio Christian Alliance, and we'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away.
Bennett, Gallagher, Prager, Medved, Hewitt, Parshall.
The names you know and trust for conservative talk. Talk here. NewsTalkColumbus.com.